What are you doing?
I'm reversing the polarity of my ultrasonic screwdriver's power source.
Reverse the polarity!
Reverse the polarity.
I just reversed the polarity.
Hello, welcome to The Fan and the Fool. I'm the fan, Matt Ancinelli.
And I'm the fool, Alex Cameron.
Perfecto.
Back again, brothers.
Don't do that. He did a weird thing with his hands. I mean, he did a normal thing. Now it just sounds weird.
What are you saying?
I don't know anymore. What's going on?
What's the happenings?
Yeah, what's the happenings?
Not much. Just been enjoying some Doctor Who.
Ooh.
Half a story arc in season one of Classic.
Good.
Yes.
Which story arc?
It's called the Censorites.
Oh, good. So we watched the same one then.
We did. I also stumbled because I couldn't read my writing. It looks like I said Sensdrites.
But they say the name Censorites a fair few times in the episode.
Yeah, but I'm not watching it now.
No,
I'm
reading, but you my must notes. Have watched it.
Yeah, I did watch it. But that O looks like a D, so it's like the Sensdrites.
Did they say that in the episode?
No.
Aww.
It's been fun.
Yes.
And I can't believe we've already watched 30 episodes, obviously minus the 7 that were lost forever. Well done, BBC.
So we've watched 23.
23, which now doesn't seem like such an achievement, so let's move on.
No, but I have plenty of things to say about the episodes that we couldn't watch.
Well, that's probably a good thing. This is a podcast where talking about things is good.
Yes, but I will tell you about them later. Is that okay?
Yes.
Good, because that's what I've planned.
Oh, well, I guess that's what we're doing.
It's then. At the back of my notes. The front of my notes is... Okay. Doesn't matter.
Let's go from relevant. Start to finish then.
Okay, so I've been good too, by the way, just saying.
Did someone ask? Is there someone here that I didn't know? I'm glad you're good.
Thank you.
Good.
I have a thing for you.
Yes, a Doctor Who possibly thing. Well, you
start. I put a sticker over the logo because I didn't want you to see it.
So, because now I have to try and guess if it's Doctor Who or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. This is one of the only few things that I know,
you already know.
Is a Doctor Who
I
thing.
I hate your face.
I don't even know why I know, because I've never seen the episodes that it's from, but it's the Weeping Angel, which is the statue that chases you when you're not looking, right?
It's brilliant.
It's like when you play that game as a kid where a person stands at the front of the room, and you got to sneak up behind them, and they turn around, and
statues?
They've got to stop moving. The statue.
Is it a statue game?
Oh, it's called statues.
Isn't it called statues?
You're the teacher.
I think it's a different thing in other countries. But in this country, I'm going statues.
We're not in other countries. Yeah, but you know that game.
I am a teacher, but we don't play that.
So I'm sorry.
Also, I'm on holidays, so I'm not currently a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Oh, one of your, what, 14 weeks a year holidays?
It's actually 15. 11.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm but anyway, I'm really sorry that you went
I've
through
got
the
marking
effort.
To do, by the way. Just saying, it's not technically holidays. Anyway, go. Describe it, at least.
Yeah, I just want to say, you put tape over what I assume.
It's
I'm
going
to pull it back now. It's
the logo.
And I'm sorry that you did that, because I know you went to the effort to try to make me guess, but I know that it's from Doctor Who.
I thought you might know.
But it's a Weeping Angel bobblehead.
Yeah.
It has like the Michelangelo style face with the screaming, but the screaming head is bubbly.
It's good, isn't it?
And obviously it's the statue with the wings and the whatever.
I've got plenty of bobbleheads, by the way.
Doctor Who ones?
Yeah. I've got one of I think a Matt Smith doctor.
I don't know who that is.
Yep. Has a fez on his head.
I know what a fez is.
Oh, that's good. That's going to come up. I shouldn't.
It's a video game from 2011 something.
Well, I'll put a fez on the table one day and you'll be like, is this Doctor Who?
Or is this video game?
Oh, yes. So, what do you think?
It's pretty freaky. I don't know if the bobblehead makes it fun or more freaky.
So, if you picture it like this, right? Think
Go
of
ahead.
This.
Go ahead.
You know how you said when you're not seeing it, they come after you?
Yeah.
Imagine turning around and it's bobbing its head at you.
That's the only part that's moving. That's somehow creepier. You're right. We should write into them and say, next time you have one of these nice little fellas on your show, make them bobbly.
Not nice. Just forewarning. Because you know it's from Doctor Who. It is going to come up. They are the opposite of nice.
Okay, well, the screaming face gave me that impression that it's not nice.
You see that face a lot.
Does it come up not for a while, though? Like, is it something that happened in classic ever? Or do I have to wait 20 years?
No, you gotta wait. It's a new classic, as they say, because it's a classic anime. Can I,
But it's from the new series, so I'm not going to see it for years.
Yes.
Okay.
Can I segue?
Yes.
Into the episodes we were watching.
What's the segue, though? What's the relationship?
I just want to say... Should I say the segue? I could have used it by now. Because that's like a new classic, right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And we have seen so many monsters already in this first season. Wow. They're not classic. Are they? No, I've forgotten what I was going to say.
That's not a segue.
It was going to be, but I've completely messed it up because I asked if I could segue. Can I change topics?
Yes.
Okay, to the Sensorites.
Oh, they're not a classic. What a segue.
Well, I hadn't watched this.
Right.
But, again...
Some fan he is. Jeez.
Well, you're definitely a fool.
Ooh. Jeez.
Stop
making me weep, Ying Angel. Ta-da! This is probably the most awkward start ever. Let's keep going.
The monsters we have seen so far, right?
Yeah.
Cave people is one. They're not really monsters, but the things that the protagonists, the things they have to overcome.
The creatures of conflict, yes.
Yes. And the cavemen, the Daleks.
Well, they're a classic.
The ones where it was,
Did you just say before the Daleks are not a classic monster?
No, I'm just saying the ones that we've seen so far. So we've had...
I'm talking about your segue.
Oh my gosh.
You said, this is a classic one, and what we've seen so far is not...
That's not what I said. You can go back and listen to this when you're editing it, and you'll know that's not what
I'm
I said.
I'm going to edit it out so I sound right.
Damn it. That's not what I want.
Excuse me, you're showing me things from like 40 years' time.
That's not even the right thing anyway. That's nothing you can see.
This guy calls himself a fan. He's on tardis.fandom.com.
Yeah.
Has the word fan in it. He doesn't know what he's doing.
I'm just trying to look up all the villains that we've seen. We saw the Aztecs last episode.
Before that, we saw the guys with the rubber suits and the big
things. That's what I mean.
That's
the one I forgot.
Yeah, I don't know what they're called. I'm going to assume we never see them again if you don't know what they're called.
I mean, I have seen them again.
Oh, so they do come up again.
In an audio story.
Oh. We haven't seen them then, have you?
Oh, Marinus. It's the Keys of Marinus, and they are... Yartek. Remember Yartek? That guy with the head? Vord.
That's what they are.
Boom.
Yartek is his name? So offensive.
Yeah, I do remember.
There was also the guy in the hut in the frozen world who...
The weird, creepy man that wanted Barbara.
That wanted Barbara? Whoa. SFW, jeez.
People listening to this in their headphones anyway, right?
What? No, I picture people wearing gangster clothing, pumping this as they floor it down the highway, because they're cool.
Perfect.
They pull up, you know how they pull up to the lights and they're like bobbling along?
What I want to say...
Hang on, they look across at the car across at them. They've got a beat going. These guys open their window up and it's just us talking about Doctor Who. We're the rivals. Yeah, boy.
What I'm trying to say is...
Yeah, try harder.
Sorry. Jeez.
What are you trying to say?
That...
You lost your favorite.
Lots
again,
of these
you?
Episodes have new creatures. And not just new creatures... Because I think it's kind of taken for granted in the modern era. There's always a new villain.
Yep.
Because there's recurring villains, but there's lots of new villains.
Right.
And there's always new characters in every new setting that they land. And I just think that must, like, take it. Like, because it's not like a traditional show where you're in, like, one space. You know what I mean? Like, they land in a new location and there's a whole new crew, basically, cast for that new location.
For that storyline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, they must burn through... actors.
Oh yeah. The only reason this one has worked is because it's been 50 years, so some of those actors die.
Great.
So they keep being replenished by new growing actors.
Or they sometimes get another the same actor to play a different character.
That must happen.
That
especially
does happen. We'll get to that.
Where it's really obvious.
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh, there's two in particular where you're like, hang on, what? Like, that person was a major character elsewhere, and now they're another major character somewhere else, and they're not the same. And it's a kind of show where if you're a fan, you would see those two things happen and go, they must be connected somehow.
That's really good.
It's
kind of like when you see Eddie Murphy in one of those movies where he plays all the roles, but Doctor Who.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, but I don't like those Eddie Murphy movies.
I didn't say they were good. I just used them as an example.
Yes, that's probably now you made me think of them.
You know the best thing he did was being a donkey in an animated film? What does that say?
Wasn't he also in Dreamgirls? That was pretty good.
Yeah. Also, we probably shouldn't talk about it because he's like been an actor for like decades. And
here we are drinking coffees and being like, actually, he was also, stop being multiple characters, Eddie Murphy. Stop making so many movies.
When are you going to learn how to do what money? You do? He's also a comedian, and we've done nothing. But I just like to criticize people for no reason sometimes.
I don't know about you, but I've taught children for 8 years.
Ooh.
Ooh. Can we start the first episode? Because we're in 10 minutes in, and we haven't even talked about like where we're up to.
Sure, but I'll just tell you from listening to our podcast as I edit, this is about when we start. There's normally 5 to 10 minutes.
Well, then I guess we should start now.
Let's start.
Okay, so the first episode is called The Strangers in Space.
Yes.
And
we're doing 3 episodes and next three.
Correct, Mondo. Next episode. This is a 6-episode story arc, so we're doing 3 then 3.
Yeah.
And then I have a surprise for you at the end.
Oh. It's not even my birthday, Matthew.
Oh. So I like that they, so this, we start at the end, from the end of the previous arc, yep. And they've landed somewhere and they're like, have we landed on something? And Barbara's like, we might have landed in something. And they're like, oh, what do you mean in something? Well, clearly that means in something.
Well, I was expecting something way cooler. I thought they were going to wake up and they were going to have been eaten by a creature or something, like the whole TARDIS. They're just landing inside another ship.
As if a creature could eat the TARDIS.
It's a police phone electronic box. It's not that big.
They get out and plow on ahead. Okay. They get out of the box. They find 2 dead people.
Did you just call it the box?
The TARDIS. They call it the box.
Show some respect.
Go back to the box. The blue box.
What's in the box? That's a deep cut from 7.
That's really good. And there's 2 dead people.
Yes. At the controls of a ship.
Dead.
He's doing that thing with the fingers when you're saying it's not really this.
You still have the piece of tape stuck to your finger.
You didn't have to say that. This is an audio podcast.
Yeah, people like a visual aspect. So they...
Unless you're the BBC, in which case, just burn old episodes. Who cares?
They taped over. They didn't burn them. So they get out there, they're dead. And so there's this immediate... And something that I think is recurring in these old episodes, which is they leave the TARDIS and they go, there's danger here. We should get back in the TARDIS and leave.
Yep.
And that's happened the last 3 story arcs, I'm pretty sure.
And they've literally never made it back.
Yeah.
They always end up stuck in some scenario. You know what's interesting, though, is they always seem... And I think this is actually clever in terms of story. They always seem to land... in the middle of or at the end of something that's already happened.
So I got that.
So it's not like they're the main characters and everything happens when they're there.
Yeah.
They're just discovering stuff that's happening around them.
And I guess that makes sense because, like, they're time traveling and just arriving at a point in time and something's happened for, like, months or years or, like, hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And so for them to turn up, you can't see all of that progression.
Yeah.
And, There's so many times when I'm not this episode in particular, but
right.
Where they land somewhere, and there's obviously something going on between like maybe 2 people, like in well actually, there's 2 people in here who are in love, but you wouldn't know that if you unless they expressly said it. They are.
Who?
The woman, Carol.
Oh yeah, sorry. John. All I can think of is.
No,
the creatures we're going to talk about later. So I'm like, which of those ones were in love? But now
I mean, they could be in love.
We should get to the people you're talking about.
The people are dead.
Dead.
I think the other thing that happens in that situation is before they see the dead people, they have this conversation about how much they've changed since going into the TARDIS.
Yes.
So I've written down how they've changed. So Barbara and Ian were kidnapped, and now they have Stockholm Syndrome. So I put that in.
Yep.
I said the Doctor is less angry.
Yes.
And I've put that Susan screams a bit less.
Yeah.
So...
And I made a note about this too. I said the whole story arc starts with them talking about how they've changed
mm-hmm.
and the journey that they've come through.
Now, I just didn't think of it until they had that conversation. But Ian and Barbara have left their lives.
Yes.
So, in modern Doctor Who, like, you would know the companions, like, close family.
Oh,
but
okay.
These ones are just like, yeah, we just left. They just... So what's happening back on Earth? They've just disappeared. And yeah. I know it's a time travel box, so they could get back to the time that they've left. But also, the Doctor's not that accurate with that.
That's true.
So,
and presumably, time's ticking on, and people are going, what happened? They went in this junkyard and they disappeared.
Yeah.
Something bad's happened to them.
Yeah.
But you're right, because... The Doctor says something about, and this might have been what you were going to say, to think it all started in a junkyard. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They just abandoned a school job and their lives.
They also left a car there. Remember, they drove to that junkyard.
That's a good point.
So they drove there, they left a car there. They flew off.
That's going to be a weird police investigation. So they were kidnapped here, but they drove to their own kidnap site.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And Susan's not there anymore. And the other thing that the Doctor mentions is a previous adventure with Susan. So again, alluding to the fact that they've been traveling for a long time.
Yeah.
So I always think that's interesting because the Doctor does that a lot where he's like, I remember being on this planet when I was in my early 400s or something. And you're like, oh, geez, all right.
Oh, geez.
But we don't actually see that story.
Well, unless that happens in the show when we go back. Matthew's doing a face, so I'm right. But can I just say something else?
Yeah, sure. I'm just drinking my coffee. You keep talking so I can keep drinking.
It's a real shame that we lost the 7-episode story arc.
Marco Polo.
Because I feel like there was a lot of character development that happened there. They even reference it in this episode where the Doctor talks about a confrontation he had.
If only we could watch some of it.
Uh-huh,
it's a surprise later.
Okay, well, I won't keep going on about it. But anyway, they seem like much better friends now. If we went back and watched episode one, I think we'd be shocked how far they've come.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty
cool. I don't know if the writers knew how they were going to develop the character at that early on. Maybe once it took off there a bit and it became like a family show, like then they went, oh, maybe we should make them a bit more like a family unit. You know?
Instead of just an angry group of individuals.
Yeah, because Barbara and Ian are basically like Susan's parents, and she's got her grandfather. You know what I mean? Like, they act like a...
Yeah.
Like, very protective of her and all that kind of stuff. And for a while there, they probably didn't know if she was willingly with the Doctor, really. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And some people might still have theories.
Well, I keep saying it... And I know you've told me it'll be 100 million years before we see it. She's not the granddaughter. That's my guess. Actually, if I say prediction, it sounds more like I know what I'm talking about than guess.
They think they're dead, so they got to leave the TARDIS.
By the way, they do the classic thing that I didn't know if we were going to see it or not in this show. Of the scary line being said and then the music. So he's like, picks up, looks at the first body at the desk. He's dead. And then the music's like, bum, bum, bum.
And then the other woman's dead, and they're like, yeah.
Ta-da. Oh, the woman too. Yeah, yeah, she was also dead. But you know what was shocking was the man died. Whoa, 1963. Politics.
So they go to leave, and then there's the two people magically wake up.
Well, the first one starts to.
And they're like, oh my gosh. And so that's Maitland...
Yes, Maitland.
Maitland. I didn't know how to spell his name, so I wrote M-A-I-T-L-A-N-D.
That's what the subtitles said.
Well, you watch with subtitles.
I always do. I don't miss anything.
I don't need subtitles.
You're the fan. But I don't miss anything, Matthew. And he says to them, grab that box. It's a heart...
Resuscitator. Which, by the way, that sounds very useful.
Yeah, literally no surgery. You just put it up to your chest, boom.
But he didn't need it.
Not at first, no.
So...
if they hadn't... So what would happen to those bodies... They keep saying this happens all the time, but he needed the resuscitator to wake up.
Don't worry about it. This happens all the time.
In Doctor Who.
So his heart just stops all the time.
But he left the thing that keeps him alive 5 feet away on a different desk.
Isn't the point is they're trying to leave, there's some force keeping them, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
And so every time they go to leave, this happens. But so they're so close to death that they seem dead, but they do just wake up. So either...
Maybe it just helps.
Either they never needed it, or he doesn't need it, and then he wakes up first and grabs the thing. Or one of them always wakes up and grabs the thing.
True.
Grab the box that's all the way over there, by the way, and save us.
Save ourselves again.
Don't put that box... Don't have that box closer to you.
So don't even just keep it on your chest.
Yeah. Because it doesn't look like it did any kind of shock or anything. It must have just sent... like a pulse or something to...
Yeah, because you could hear the heartbeat. But all they did was place a box on their chest. No wires attached to it, nothing.
28th century. That's going to be a great year. That's
whoa! Did you say 28th century?
Yeah.
That's where they're from.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's the technology. So we won't have that technology until the 28th century.
To you saying that.
But we'll still have old school printers and stuff in the 28th century, apparently.
Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting. So they wake up and they're like... They don't seem that concerned by the fact that they have new people on their ship. No, really?
That's
they
what I thought was weird.
They were just like, oh, well, welcome. And
hello.
They weren't that fussed by... they weren't that fussed by having the TARDIS people there. Nor the fact that... Like, they caught on pretty quickly that they were time travellers.
Yeah, and I don't know why. Oh, no. I'll tell you why. Because... They start saying, oh, you're from Earth too.
Yeah.
Are you from London? We're from London.
Yeah. Well, because they're all English actors, aren't they? So they'll have to be from London.
And the guy says, oh, that hasn't been London for centuries.
It's called Central City.
Yeah.
How exciting. So in 700 years' time, they're going to change the name of that city.
Yeah.
By that point.
To
Central City. That doesn't really sound like it. Something that would happen. It was Central City, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like Central something. I think it was Central City.
Yeah.
But they also make it sound like something happens to the Big Ben.
Yeah.
Because Susan keeps like, bringing it up.
What's Big Ben? Oh, yeah. Like, it's a big clock. And they're like, oh, interesting.
That's kind of scary. That makes me think like... I mean, I'm just going to say it. That's like someone from 1960 going, oh, what about the Twin Towers? And going, no, he doesn't know.
Yeah. I guess.
So at some point in the next 500, 600 years, there's going to be a terrorist plot on Big Ben.
Well...
Fictional in this fictional show, I clarify.
Look,
I mean, it makes sense.
It's just made me think of something. It's just made me think of something.
In the show?
Yeah.
Oh.
So
does this lead to something that makes sense
it
later?
It just makes me think of something else that's happened to Big Ben.
But does it make sense in terms of what happens in this
episode? Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool.
But I can't remember if... so, look, this isn't a spoiler, because I guess they've said it already.
That's true.
So, at some point, Big Ben is destroyed.
Wow, so this...
So, but I can't remember if it gets rebuilt, or if it's just destroyed.
Maybe it gets rebuilt after this point in time in the 28th century.
Yeah, maybe.
That would be amazing if all of those sort of like small plot things.
It would blow my mind if they actually thought of this when they wrote that.
You'd have to think they'd have enough people on staff that know, or at least they have enough people involved, like consultants and fans, who know enough of the history of the show to go, we're going to do this in this story. Will this make sense?
And they're like, oh my gosh.
And some dude, could have been one of us, says, you know. In the Sensorite Strangers in Space 50, 60 years ago, they talked about this.
Yeah.
Imagine that, if it all winds up.
That's insane. When we get to that,
we'll have to try and remember.
I cannot wait to get to that.
Now we will remember. I'm sure we'll remember discussing a terrorist attack on the Big Ben.
They do mention the fact that cars are no longer on the road.
We've got
flying cars by the 28th century too, which is pretty cool. And they've got heart resuscitator, I've already said that. The air traffic's really bad though. So the traffic on the road was really bad. But now that the traffic's in the sky, it probably got better for a bit, and now it's bad as well. So that's good.
Why wouldn't you go back to driving then? Imagine if you were the only car on the road.
I'm sure there's still cars on the road.
Maybe that's for the poor people.
Okay.
Well, I'm just saying, if it's in the future and everyone who has some wealth is flying around in the sky, it would make sense.
Maybe the ground is only for active transport. Walking and riding.
There was a time when the rich person was the one with the bike. The bicycle. Look at my penny farthing.
Yeah.
And now...
Not practical bike, just saying.
No, not at all. Oh, what a lovely suit. Here, get me 10 feet up in the air on this bicycle, will you? I need
so
to
I can
show
look
off.
Down at all my peasants.
And then it turned into, I want to drive past all my peasants. And then apparently it turns into, I want to fly over the top of all my peasants.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, Carol mentions John.
Yes.
And
who's John?
John is another member of their crew. But they don't actually say where he is or what's happened to him. They're like, oh, we don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that going on. And then some time passes and Susan and Barbara make some food.
Yep.
Do you remember that?
For some reason, I don't.
And while this is all happening, does it... Now, see, this is a good thing that we... Because we've actually got the thing open. You explain it.
Okay, well, last week, Matt and I discussed the idea of having the actual TARDIS.fandom.com in front of us for each of the stories we discussed so that we don't go off track too much and we don't leave out important plot points. Because we tend to discuss about the show, but we just want to make sure we don't miss anything important.
So we're not just reading off the page, but it's kind of there to track where we're up to within the episode.
Because as you know by now, it took us 10 minutes to say, let's begin.
So this is a little bit earlier.
Yes.
Just before they make the food, because they get trapped on the ship. They realize the TARDIS lock has gone.
Yes.
So, I've called it, I've given this a name now because it's happened so much.
Okay.
So I've said that the TARDIS has been TARDIS'd because it keeps getting put out of commission. So when something useful, like the most useful thing in the episode is suddenly gone, it's been TARDIS'd.
It's been TARDIS'd. So have you coined that?
Well, I've coined it for this. Maybe someone else has coined it before.
And to explain TARDIS'd. What we mean by the lock and the door has been taken out.
The whole lock of the door has been taken out.
Yeah. If you've seen No Country for Old Men, the movie, by any chance, the guy has an air... By guy, I mean Javier Bardem. He has like this air rifle thing that he puts up to the lock and blows it in so he can go into a house.
Mm-hmm.
And just the lock spits through to the other side.
Yeah.
It's the opposite. It's sucking it back in. That's basically what they do with some weird device that they have.
Yeah, it was like with a little handle...
Yeah.
The sensorites have taken out the lock mechanism. Mm. Now, I thought that was a bit weird because without the lock, surely the doors would just open.
No, but the doctor explains that because I thought that.
Mm.
And then the...
Explain.
Susan, well, you might know have the words better, but Susan says, can't we just get in there?
Yes.
What are you laughing
have
at?
The words better. I like it.
Might be able to explain it better as a fan. Can't we just open the doors and get in? And the doctor says, you don't want to throw off all the...
security things.
I thought he said something about the chemical balance in the ship or something.
Oh.
Isn't that what he said?
I must have just missed that. Because he says that that's the only way into the ship.
Yes.
He does say that.
He does.
That he knows of at this moment.
Oh, jeez.
So,
there's a lot of foreshadowing for things that I may not see for years.
I foreshadow a lot so you forget the thing by the time you get there.
Well, that's useful.
And so they're flying towards a planet?
So the TARDIS is stuck inside the ship with these people, and now the whole ship is being forced to move towards a planet.
Yes. So, John, they're making food, and I know how this happens, you know, doesn't quite say it there, but Barbara asks where the water is.
Yes, that's right.
And they're like, oh, it's down the corridor on the right. And so Barbara and Susan go off in search of water, and on the right, there's like a cupboard that says water on it, which, by the way, doesn't look very...
You know, the water cupboard.
The water cupboard. Maybe in the 20th century you have water cupboards. And they go through another door that opens with, you know, a bit of a hand wave.
Yep.
So I wasn't that shocked that time. I was like, we've seen this before.
We saw that in the Dalek episode.
Yeah. And the whole thing opens and they walk in and they're like, she said it was on the right. And they walk down and they see John.
A stranger.
I guess they don't know it's John, but they probably work it out by that point.
And he looks really spaced out.
Yeah, like he's lost his mind.
Yeah.
And
why would they send them down there to get water if he's there?
Yes.
Or did they get the instructions wrong?
I like it how that happens and they get trapped with him. So the door closes and they get trapped in there with him.
Yeah.
And they go...
The guy walking around like a Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah, Maitland and Carol suddenly go, oh, we should have warned them about the one danger that we think is on the ship. We should have warned them about that. Maybe if you just told us about John, we would have just gotten it.
At the beginning.
So they realize they're stuck. Maitland uses the slowest cutting utensil possible to try and open the door.
Because they can't get in now. The doors are locked from the inside.
Yeah, but it's like using like a little tiny blowtorch. Like, I don't know. You have some better tools in the 28th century, people.
And also, don't say this won't take long.
Take
if
forever.
It will take long.
Yeah. And so...
It's like trying to break open a metal door with an electric toothbrush.
Yes.
And Ian's like, what are you doing? Hurry up!
This will only take a second. And I put here...
Mm-hmm.
So Barbara and Susan are trying to get away from John. And they hide in like a cupboard again. And I put Barbara narrowly misses getting spotted again. By someone who just like walks into a room and looks everywhere except where she is.
Yeah.
And then walks out.
Because that happened with... It wasn't the Aztecs, it was earlier than that.
It was in the... Was it the Keys of Marinus?
Yeah, when they were going to different places all the time.
Yes. And she was ended up being in the space with another woman.
Apparently in 1963, if you stand vaguely behind a half wall, no one can see you.
Good to know if I ever go to 1963.
Or the 18th, 28th century.
Now, the Doctor, and even with this, we've just missed a little bit about the... They almost crash into the planet.
Mm-hmm.
That's not from that, I don't think. We still missed a bit where they almost crash into a planet. But there's pretty good visual effect of the ship almost hitting the sense sphere.
Yeah.
But then missing it.
And the Doctor is able to help... What are their names?
Maitland and Carol.
To kind of come to their senses. Because this whole time, they seem to be under some weird hypnosis or something from these aliens that have them trapped on this ship.
Mm.
But he manages to talk them through working the controls to not crash into the planet.
Yes.
And they realize, oh, this Doctor can actually, you know...
He seems like he might know what things are going on, you know?
Yeah. Like a doctor.
But they keep talking about the sensorites. They're like, that's their problem. And then at the very end of the episode, they see some ships and they judge like it's going to take that long for them to get there. And once the sensorites actually arrive at the ship, one of them pokes their head up.
Hello.
Yeah. And that's when that first episode ends.
That's how it ends, with an alien head.
Yeah.
You know what's funny though? And I did want to mention this because it's that thing that we talked about where... When there's episodes within a story arc, and the next episode has the same, this last few seconds from the previous one, they reshoot it, so it changes.
Yeah,
but the alien looked completely different the second time.
Yes, I actually said in the second viewing, the sensorites actually look quite, their heads look quite convincing.
Yeah,
before they start talking.
So
I thought they weren't going to speak. Until they did. I thought they were just going to be all like... Like their mouths weren't going to move. They were going to be all telepathy or something.
Yeah, yeah.
because I couldn't see a mouth. It turns out you don't need one. You just talk normally and your chin just moves up and down.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't see a mouth. Although there was a lot of... They've got like a beard.
Yeah.
They've got like a reverse head. There's no hair on top, but there's like hair along the bottom
down
of their
the face.
Yeah.
But for 1963, or around that time, they looked pretty good.
Yeah, the alien heads. I thought the head looks very convincing. I said that their pants look less convincing. It just looks like they're wearing tracksuit pants.
Yeah, I put here the cotton wool one piece suit doesn't do justice to the alien head.
No.
Because you can tell.
Like, spend all the money on that head, probably.
It just looks like a Star Trek suit, but in great black and white TV.
And their feet are, like, circular?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, suction-y, cappy-looking things.
Yeah.
But their hands are normal hands.
Yep. And they talk...
Interesting.
They kind of talk... Well, you've told me that the TARDIS translates.
Yes.
So maybe that's what's happening, if you want to get away with that.
Yes. Well, we'll get away with that eventually.
Oh, okay. So not yet. So right now, that sucks. They should fix that.
So John is still with Barbara and Susan at this point.
Yep.
But he senses... John senses that two Sensorites have entered the ship.
He knows they're there.
He knows that they're there.
And during this time... Susan and Barbara realize that he's not really a threat to them. He's actually upset.
Yeah. And it seems like he's getting orders from the Sensorites to do things, like, to harm them. And he's like, I don't want to, they're my friends.
Yep.
But I think that kind of flies in the face of how the Sensorites actually behave later. Like, they seem like they don't actually want to hurt anybody.
Yeah, that's true.
But they seem to be wanting him to hurt Susan and Barbara.
Maybe that's how they justify it.
It's like, it's not me.
Yeah, we're not hurting you.
Yeah.
But you're right, it goes completely against what they're leading to.
Yes. So, John... So, Susan and Barbara need to, like, overcome, like, the mint. Because they start getting... They kind of sense, like, messages from the Sensorites as well.
And it's like mental warfare / hypnosis type of a thing.
Yeah.
They don't want to be overcome in the same way that John is.
Yeah, so they come up with, like, a chant in their heads, the We Defy You thing.
Yeah.
And they resist. And then Susan, it's interesting because Susan seems, like, you know how I keep saying I think she's... telepathic.
Yes.
She seems a lot more able to communicate with, like, telepathic beings.
Absolutely.
Like, Barbara... I was surprised because Barbara also was like, I can hear them too. Like, oh, maybe they're both a bit like that. But Susan in particular is like, she can hear them clearly.
And she makes it clear that she hears them very clearly and they are aware of it as well, the Sensorites.
Yes. So they resist, and the Sensorites are, like, defeated.
Yeah, they like, grab their heads like they've a headache. Yeah. Like, they've actually lost this mental battle.
Like, mental, like, feedback or something.
Yeah.
And the door opens because of the slow cutting, has managed to cut the lock mechanism and open it.
Yeah.
And they go right back out. And they lock him back in? Do they lock him back in?
Yeah, so what... Yeah,
that's... Oh, John... Yeah, so John, Barbara, Susan, they all leave that room and they close the door.
So now they're not scared of John.
No.
As in... But I'm talking about the original crewmates on that ship who said, we don't want to talk about it. We should have warned you. They don't seem bothered now.
No. I mean, there's a bit of a back and forth between Carol and John. Like, so Carol, John and Maitland are all kind of like... talking, and John has lost his mind, and Carol's like, what if you were, like, this was happening to someone that you love, you don't understand, or whatever, to Maitland.
Yeah.
And that's where you get, like, they've got a relationship going on. But, like, they just, again, because of this show, like, you've just come into the, like, at the midpoint of that relationship. Like,
yeah.
So you're like, oh, all right, I guess that's fine, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So what happens then is they are protected now from the sensorites behind these doors.
Yeah.
They're back at the control panels of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
But then the sensorites start communicating with Susan.
Yes.
And basically saying, we don't want to harm you, we just want to talk.
Yes. It's
kind of the dialogue that happens.
I know we were just telling that guy to harm you, but we don't want to harm you. Let's just talk.
Let's have a chat over some coffee. Yeah.
So before or some they
vintage water.
Before they come in, Ian puts John to like to sleep. Like to rest.
sleep with the fishes.
And doesn't do the sleeper hold thing from the Aztecs. In fact, no. Doesn't seem as good a fighter as he did last week.
Awesome.
But John says something about the riches of avarice. Is it avarice? The riches of avarice, yes. The dreams of avarice.
Yes.
And so they're like, oh, there must be something that, like, that must mean something.
So the thing to do with the yes. phrase, the dreams of avarice,
yeah.
is that Ian has a theory about why the sensorites, who apparently don't want to harm anybody,
yeah.
seem perfectly okay with mind-harming John.
Yes.
I don't know how else to put it, but that's what they're doing.
So they mention that Earth people had come before.
Yeah.
Because they have this discussion with the Doctor.
Where the Doctor basically says... Like, and I wanted to say too, this is the first time we've really seen him kind of step up and be the hero.
Yeah.
Although it's kind of referenced that he did it in those Lost episodes earlier as well.
Yeah, I think he's quite good at talking. Like, he's not really a... He's obviously not really a fighter.
Yeah.
But when he's, like, talking to the villain...
He can be intimidating.
He can be intimidating. So, they tell him that Earth people came before, and they can't let them leave because... of the riches of that they... Like, the Doctor works out that there must be riches in the sense sphere.
Yep.
And it turns out to be molybdenum?
I don't know how to pronounce it. It's like a mineral that starts with M.
Yeah.
Molybdenum.
Yes.
Molybdenum.
So, the Doctor and Ian, like, they kind of work out that there's something rich there that they need to... That the sensorites are worried that the humans would take.
Yes.
And so that's why they won't let them leave.
Well, that, and it relates specifically to John, because the idea is that the more a person puts out their thoughts in a strong way, the easier it is for them to read their mind.
Yeah.
And John had such a strong desire to bring lots of ships to that planet to take out this mineral that the Sensonites realized that John was going to be a threat to them and their planet. So that's why they're so afraid of humans and why they won't let these two crew in a ship, well, the three of them, leave.
Yeah.
They're scared that they're just going to come back and mine the planet to death.
And also, I can't remember if it's here or later, they talk about the disease that's spreading in there.
I think it's in the next episode, yeah. But it's all related. We can talk about it.
Yeah, so the other thing is they're worried about... they think that the humans brought disease to their planet as well.
Yeah.
So they don't really want to deal with...
There was initially 5 crew and 2 ships.
Yeah.
And one of the ships tried to escape.
Yeah.
And it exploded. There was some malfunction on the way out. And ever since then, there's been disease on the planet and the sensorites are dying. And they blame the humans for it.
Hmm. So I've got the Doctor and the sensorites chat about the history of the sense sphere.
Yeah.
And then... They talk about, like, they have a bit of a discussion. So, I've got, because Susan, eventually Susan is going to decide to go with them. But at this point, the Doctor's trying to say, they're talking about how, you know, they can defend themselves.
Yeah.
And Barbara is said, it looks like, obviously, we can against you. And the sensorites say, you've only proved that you can lock doors. And I was like, that's actually true. Because they've only locked them behind a door. That's the sensor rights actually came through.
Yeah.
Even when Susan and when Barbara and Ian went to like find them, they were like walking back this way with them, and Ian was threatening them with like a stick or something.
But yeah, they tried to go and find them and intimidate them, but they got intimidated.
Yeah.
And the only thing they could defend themselves with was Ian holding up some sort of weapon.
Yeah.
But not walking at them, walking away from them, backing away from them.
Yeah. And they work out at that point that they're scared of, they're both scared of each other.
Yeah.
So, and the doctor says a really cool line. He says, "I will cause you more trouble than you have bargained for." Like, he's being really quite aggressive. And I was like, oh, that's because...
That's what I was referencing, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that was quite good.
And they say, is that a threat?
Yes.
And he says, I don't make threats.
But it's I keep promises, yeah. Basically. And you're like, whoa, all right. Jeez. Everybody calm down.
This guy.
And so,
the doctor also realizes what one of their weaknesses is.
Yes, no, that's not yet.
Okay, forget I said that.
Because it's after this bit.
Right.
So Susan decides to go with the sensorites. She's like, I can hear them, I can telepath with them, I understand them.
Can I quickly say one thing?
Yep.
Ian confirms what I've been saying for the last three episodes of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, the splitting up always leads to trouble.
I've got that quote as well, yeah.
And he's now realizing they're still doing it. They're still splitting up as a crew. Every single storyline that happens, they get themselves in trouble.
Huh. Oh, that's the next episode. He says it's in the next episode, but yes, he does say.
But they're about to split up.
Yes. So Susan's like, I'll go with him because I understand them. They're not going to harm us. I'm just going to go with some strangers down to a planet that I've never been to before.
Because they've agreed to... Is this yet or later?
They want to see if they can help them with their disease, the TARDIS team.
Yep.
And I'm guessing in exchange, because they hadn't really ironed out the details, they'll let them go.
And help John.
And help John. That's right, because John's lost his mind.
And they're the only ones who I guess can fix it because they caused it.
But at this point, they're just going to take Susan down.
Yes.
And then that's when the episode ends.
Bum, bum, bum.
And then episode 3. Now.
And if anything was to ever confirm your theory about Susan being telepathic, it's this series of episodes. I think she definitely is. There's no question.
Yeah. Well, I think that, yes. I think that there's something going on with the Doctor too. Because the Doctor says during this episode to Ian, oh, good work. And Ian's like, I didn't say anything. And he was like, I know a thing or two about telepathy as well. You know what I mean?
Butum tish.
So you also get that thing of like, oh, is the Doctor also got a little bit of that going on?
Right. Which you obviously have some idea of and I don't know. So.
Yeah.
I thought he was just making a joke because obviously Susan's been doing it. He's like, gotcha.
I also thought he could have just been saying that to be funny.
True.
And be like, you know... confirm that they're related in some way. You know what I mean?
Trying to.
Yes. The Doctor and his companions refuse to let Susan leave.
Yep.
With the sensorites. So they just... So at the end of the last episode, she gets taken. At the start of this episode, they're like, nah. And they go after them.
This is a bad idea. We shouldn't be splitting up.
Yeah. Splitting up always leads to trouble.
Yep.
Quote Ian, 1963. Ian. Or the 28th century. Whichever one you want to say. Susan's like, oh, let me go, I'll do whatever. And the Doctor's quite firm with, like, no, you're being ridiculous. Because I think she's only, like, 16 or something. I don't think she's that old.
No.
Like, she looks 16-ish or whatever.
And he's repeatedly calling her grandchild to make it clear.
And, like, no, you don't go, you, like, you know. And later when they're talking about this... He does make a good point, like, don't just make decisions on your own. We have to, like work together.
Yeah.
Which I guess kind of makes sense, but he also does it in a bit of a way that's like, I know best, you know nothing, kind of like that.
I'm the boss.
Yeah. So, they don't let Susan go, and the Doctor and Ian have worked out that the darkness is what the sensorite's, like, weakness is.
Yeah.
So... They get Susan, and the sensorites are like, now, like, what are we supposed to do now? Like, we're supposed to take her with us. And they have, like, a bit of an argument, and then they turn out the lights. And the sensorites are immediately like, ah, no, and they grab their heads. Which, by the way, that's a pretty significant weakness. The light.
Just complete darkness.
Yeah. So, because I was trying to follow...
The logic?
Maybe I missed something.
Yeah.
Because, so they've got, they can see, but they can't see in the darkness. But is it the fact that they also can't, like, telepathically communicate in the darkness?
If that was part of it, I completely missed it.
Because I feel like, I mean, unless they just are cripplingly afraid of the dark.
Well, this is what...
It must affect their senses in some way, not having light.
The way the doctor described it, from what I remember from the episode...
Yeah.
He says, I've looked at their eyes. Have you noticed that in the light, their pupils go really big?
Yes.
And they go, yeah. The rest of the crew says, yes, doctor, because whatever. And he says, that is the opposite to a cat.
Yes.
Which is why a cat's eyes must... The pupils go big in the dark. That's why they can see so well in the dark.
Yes.
So his theory was, if they're the opposite... Then if we make them be in the dark, they're not going to be able to see. And what's scarier than an enemy you can't see? That's the entire logic behind it. So let's turn the lights off and see what happens.
Yeah, that is correct.
But it still
seems a bit flimsy. Because, by the way...
It is flimsy.
They flew to the ship, right? And the sensorite in the first episode was outside the window.
In space.
In space. Which, space is dark.
Yes.
So, like, its space is absent of, like, it has light in it, obviously, but you'd think it'd still be pretty dark out there.
The weird thing is...
Unless there's a sun nearby, obviously.
Well, it doesn't seem like it, because it seems pretty dark outside.
Yeah.
And the thing is...
It's also a black and white TV show, so you can't really tell.
I mean, what ends up eventually happening is most of the crew, except Barbara, agree to go down with them. So yeah, Susan's not by herself.
Yes.
But my only point in saying all that is, why do they... I mean, it's such a flimsy part of the story to turn the lights off and have them going, meh.
Yeah.
Unless that's coming up in the next few episodes we haven't seen yet. They could have skipped that whole point.
How do they go to bed? Do they just have the lights on all the time? That's just, you know, like...
Imagine saying, good night. Eyes open, lying with a light on the room.
Yeah, so I guess if you close your eyes, does that make you... Maybe they never close their eyes? I guess the masks don't let them... Like, the prosthetics thing on their face.
That's true. We do never see them blink.
Never see them blink.
It's a human wearing a mask.
Yes, yeah. So maybe their eyes are just open all the time.
I did know someone at school who slept with their eyes open.
Yes, I've known someone who slept with their eyes open.
So it happens.
Mm.
Maybe they've never seen the dark. Maybe they're a sensorite.
But they sleep.
Do they?
Yeah.
Have we seen them sleep?
No, as in like people with their eyes open.
Oh, yes, sleep. yes, they do. I thought you meant a sensorite.
People with their eyes open sleep.
They're just like, oh, I'm in complete agony for 8 hours every night. No one knows. I can't sleep.
Okay. So,
by the way.
Yeah.
You know how in a previous story arc, the doctor was away for a fair chunk of it because he was on a holiday?
Yeah.
I'm assuming Barbara's character actor needs to go on a holiday because she's the only one left on the ship.
Yes, but I thought that.
Okay.
But then I realised she's been left alone with a strange man before.
That is true.
So
this is just her thing.
It's just her thing.
As the kids call it, this is her kink and don't kink shame.
Was that the only other time it's happened? So it happened in the Keys of Mariners. It's happened here.
No, I feel like... No. There was also... in the episode with the Daleks, there was that guy that she was kind of interested in.
Oh, the perfect man.
Yes. She's into... She loves men. She doesn't just... She's actually quite fair. She doesn't discriminate. If there's a single man around, she's there.
Well, I guess Maitland... He could be single. Anyway.
That's a good point, but I'm just saying, I get the feeling that if she's not in the next episode or two, it's because they're like, well, this can explain her having a holiday.
Yes.
She's on the ship while the entire 90% of everybody else leaves.
It is mentioned that her and So Ian's actor, William Russell.
Yeah.
And Jacqueline Hill do have a holiday at some point. So this could have been it.
Well, there you go.
Maybe it's in the story notes. I'll have a look after.
Well, it might be in the next episodes that she's clearly not there. So we'll have to wait.
I'll find it for trivia in the next episode.
Sounds good.
So they get to the planet surface.
Mm-hmm.
And they've realized this, like, again, they've arrived in the middle of something. So there's some politicking going on.
Yes, which was a really cool part of the story.
Yes, because you just assume that these, like, their whole society are like these two sensorites that they have met. But they kind of aren't that scary, or, like, they don't have a lot going on.
Yeah.
But they've got their elder, like, the man in charge.
First elder,
who... You can tell he explains it, that he's the first elder, because he's wearing two sashes.
Double sash.
And the second
in command... It takes a very secure man to wear a double sash.
Yeah. It's like a big X. It's like an X-Men uniform.
Yeah, I've seen many X-Men wear sashes.
The second one in charge just wears one sash.
Yeah.
And everyone else... Some of them wear like a... I think he said like a belt. Some of them wear like belts. And then the ones who don't matter don't... wear anything.
And he kind of really methodically explains they have a caste system on their planet.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was like... They arrived and they're like, you mustn't talk to anybody. They don't, you know, they're not allowed to speak to you. You're not allowed to speak to them.
Yeah.
Because they're from a lower caste. And I was like, whoa.
So we've got elders?
Yes.
We've got warriors?
Yes.
And we have workers?
Yes.
Don't talk to the workers.
Yeah, that's basically it. And Susan was like, excuse me? And they're like, that's the way it is.
And you know what I did? Honestly, you know what I was thinking? Because both Susan and the Doctor start to push back against that idea or that ideology. Shut the hell up. What does it matter to you? You just want to get out of here. Stop interfering in their political affairs.
Yeah. Maybe once you have access to your TARDIS back, then you can try and, you know, agitate for some change in this society. But wait... till you have your lock back and just do whatever they ask you.
Just yell it as you leave with the ship. This is disrespectful to other people.
Or just have the... because you can just stand in the doorway of the TARDIS and make a, you know...
declaration.
A speech. And then if they go, yeah, nah, and they try to attack you, just close the doors and fly off.
Bloop. And that disappearing act they do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they don't do that anymore. Don't have those things anymore.
No, the TARDIS.
Yeah, but you said the bloop thing. You know, the thing where they teleport...
I was just making a sound for the TARDIS.
That's not the sound it sounds like.
How would I know?
Yeah, I know.
The only sound that I know the TARDIS makes is the one that's in the theme song. Because they landed one time that I've seen so far when it does
that.
Yeah,
you don't even see them land in this one.
That's the only thing I've ever heard.
So, they get well fed.
Yes.
And they're eating or whatever.
They're treated like diplomats.
Yeah.
Dignitaries.
But there's some people who aren't. Is it the city administrator who's like, yeah, we're not having any of this.
They're not happy with the humans.
Yeah, so they're like, we're going to disintegrate them with our disintegrator.
And actually, as they're walking through the city, you hear other Sensonites talking about them and saying, oh, it's those humans.
Yeah, who brought disease to our planet.
Yeah.
Which
is a really cool part of the story. I'm glad that that's in it, because it kind of... the whole political thing brings something more depth to just like, oh, these guys are scared of the dark.
You know? I think it's interesting too that the Doctor never pushes back on them assuming that he's human. You know what I mean? Like, he's never like,
yeah,
actually, not me. That's not me. He just kind of goes with it.
Yeah.
And so they're eating, and the city administrator is like, when they sit in that position,
they have like some sort of a negotiation
table,
like just a bunch, yeah, seats and tables, whatever.
John and Carol have gone to get treatment for John.
Carol, Susan,
no, Carol.
Oh, John's woman.
John's woman, Carol.
Girlfriend. I'm thinking of Susan. But she's with them.
So yes. John and Carol have gone to get...
you were correct. It is Carol.
Fixed. John fixed or whatever.
Yeah.
And...
not like a dog. Like treatment.
Yes.
They're not getting him fixed.
And...
maybe that is the treatment.
And then just plowing on. John
won't be able to.
While they're kind of eating and whatever.
Yeah.
The city administrator is like, we'll set this up so that when we push this button, we'll disintegrate their hearts. And he's like, are humans' hearts on the left or the right or in the middle, like us? And they're like, I think they're in the middle. And I just thought that whole conversation was really weird.
Well, that guy straight up pretended he knew what he was doing when he didn't, because he goes, it's in the center, I'm pretty sure. So let's do that. I'm sure this will work.
Yeah. That's not how that works.
Some sort of weird disintegration ray.
Yeah.
So you've got this battle between the city administrator and the first and second elder.
Yeah.
About whether or not they're going to tolerate the humans.
And they, as the doctor in and Susan kind of move into the right position, they get interrupted from being like, someone interrupts them from disintegrating them. And it's like, no, you don't do that.
You're not in charge here.
You're not in charge here. And he takes the key.
Yeah, that makes the device work.
Yeah.
There's so many devices with very elongated and particular keys so
that
far.
That key. I was like, that's not a key. It's huge.
Yeah. It's like a baton.
And so they're like, yep. Okay. They were like, I guess what can they do?
Yeah.
And so they sit down. Ian has some water. He's had some water.
Hang on. Before you skip ahead.
Yeah.
They talk about the food and the drink they're about to have.
Mm-hmm.
And...
That's right.
The first elder says to the person who's brought them the food and drink, why are you giving them this bad water?
Give them crystal water.
Give them the crystal water. These are dignitaries.
Yes.
And the guy goes, oh yes, and he backs away.
Yeah.
And then they start talking to him about... What are you talking about? And he says, well, elders have special crystal water, and I want you to have the special crystal water.
Yeah. But Ian's the only one that drinks it.
Well, not the crystal water, the water they've already been given.
Oh.
So this is what happens.
Because I thought they all had the... I thought they all got served crystal water at that point, and then Ian had a drink, but the other two didn't drink from it yet.
No. So what happens is... That guy never comes back yet with the water.
You're right. Ian has already drunk his...
He's drunk the old water. And he starts to choke.
Yes.
So that's when I think... I mean, it's pretty obvious. But I think what's going to happen is... What I think is going to happen is...
Sorry. Ian's going to die. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. Thank you for watching Doctor Who. The Doctor is going to realize that the disease is not caused by humans or the explosion of the ship. It's by the water.
There's something wrong with their water supply.
Because he starts talking to the first elder, and he says to the first elder, has any of the elders ever got sick? And he says no.
Hmm.
So that's the only difference. But by that point, Ian's already had a drink of that bad water, and he starts to choke.
And then he collapses on the ground.
But hilariously...
Good falling down acting again, by the way.
Oh man, he's a treasure.
And can I just... William Russell... Like, I haven't watched a lot of actors from like this era of... acting
anything,
but he seems like quite a good actor.
Yeah,
and Jaclyn Hill, she's quite a good actress as well. Ian and Barbara, I think they're both very good actors.
Yeah they really, I think, because there's so much weird stuff that happens with the Doctor and Susan, they kind of sell it because they're normal people who can act.
Yeah.
What I mean is...
I know what you mean, because... So those two companions are like our... They're like us. They're like the average person who's like, what's all this going on? And how you would deal with it if you were in that situation.
Exactly. You need the person you can relate to in any show. And in this show so far, it's neither the Doctor nor Susan. They're weirdos.
Yeah.
Which is the point.
Yes.
But they are normal, but they're such good actors that you relate to them.
Yeah.
But hilariously, when Ian falls down and starts to choke... and passes out, the first elder does exactly what you did and goes, yeah, he's gonna die. It's like 10 seconds.
Yes,
he goes, there's nothing we can do, he's dying.
Well, that means the next episode is gonna start with Ian's death.
Well, it's called A Race Against Death, so I think he will die.
But then there's two more episodes after that.
The rest of them die. You didn't realize that the whole rest of Doctor Who's all been a dream in the afterlife?
That's why the actor keeps changing. He's like, I feel like I should look like this now.
Would your mind be blown if that's what happened and you realize that the show you've loved for like years is all just afterlife?
There's a few things that's not true.
Okay.
But there's a few things where the history, what would you call it, the lore of the show is radically changed by some event. And sometimes I'm like, all right. And other times I'm like, oh, this is really interesting.
So sometimes it's not good, or you don't feel like it's good.
Well, sometimes I don't mind things getting changed, really. I'm not one of those fans who's like, pick up a pitchfork and let's go get Chris Chibnall and Stephen Moffat. You'll know who they are later.
Sure.
Sometimes I'm a bit like, I don't know how that's going to work, or that doesn't work because of this, but hey, wibbly wobbly.
True.
Timey wimey.
I'm sure that's a phrase that someone says at some point. It's way too distinct to be just random nonsense you've thrown together.
Well, it's really good because I think we'll get to some points where there's some... It's really good, just letting you know that.
Okay.
It's really good because we'll get to some points where there's what are called mini episodes, and that's set in one of them.
Okay.
They're like YouTube short things. They're like 10 minutes long, but right. They're really cool.
Yeah.
They're normally for like charity specials or something.
But they're part of the...
They're canonical.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So that's that for now.
That's where we're up to, Ian dying.
That's a good point to stop anyway.
Yeah, that was great. What's going to happen? What a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Love it.
I've got some things to talk to you about.
Talk to me.
So before we go, because I'm not going to give you trivia.
Yep.
I am going to give you a little bit of trivia, but not about specifically this episode.
Because we're going to wait until we finish the story arc. I think that makes sense.
But I found this list on this website of all the episodes that are missing.
Yep.
So if they're red, they're completely missing. So you can't see Marco Polo. I'm really sorry about that.
Actually, you know, I did read a random bit of trivia about that.
Yep.
That there was a long time that they thought they would have the Marco Polo storyline because an Australian had them recorded and then his house burned down. And the only copy of that ever is gone.
So there are some... and I think we'll come back to them much later.
Yeah.
Because I've got two things I want to kind of come back to. So some of these, even though the video doesn't exist, the audio does. So you can go back and listen to it.
Yeah.
Not as interesting.
That's okay.
I feel like we could do that for a special at some point.
Agreed.
I'd have to find that CD with that on it.
Well, there's no rush, but we'll do that.
But I can tell you what I have ordered.
You've ordered? Ooh.
Yeah. So... last week I said that this will be the last like episode of this season that we can watch, but it's not true. So the Reign of Terror is partially missing. So what they've done recently, and when I say recently, 8 years ago.
Well, compared to
1964.
It's recent.
By the way, we're in 1964 now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
They've animated some of the episodes. So I think there's only three episodes actually in the Reign of Terror that are available, but they've animated the rest.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find anywhere on any retail site for an Australian region DVD, but the Brisbane City Council has it in their library.
Really?
So I've ordered it.
That's
so
amazing.
So we can watch it.
That's amazing.
So we'll have to probably figure it out because it's DVD. Maybe I'll watch three of them and then give you the DVD.
Yeah.
And work it out like that.
Yeah, absolutely. We should do it properly, yeah.
So it has all the audio, but it's animated and there's even a commentary on it.
That's cool.
Yeah. So...
because I do feel like we've gotten through season one pretty quickly.
The other thing I want to show you is the other thing that I've ordered, which is... it's not that. There's a box set... you know what, I've probably closed it somewhere else. There's a box set that has all of the yellow ones in just the episodes that are available... yeah, I'm going to talk to you about that in a second.
Okay.
So the yellow ones are the ones that where parts of the episodes are available. Galaxy 4, which is the first episode of Season 3, the first arc of Season 3, that's being re-released soon with animation and stuff as well.
Right. Hopefully that's done by the time we get there.
It's coming out this year. So, yes, it will be. But I've got ones where it's got the episodes in yellow that they do have available.
Yep.
I own that one, The Tenth Planet, because it's quite significant.
Right.
But you will just, as your face did that, because most of season 3 is nowhere to be found.
Man, that's amazing.
So most of season 3 is gone. The Daleks Master Plan is the one that I really kind of want to see.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the returns of the Daleks. You will see Daleks again before that.
Okay.
And then season 4 is like completely gone.
Man.
I think I have that one. They've animated the entire thing.
The Power of the Daleks in season 4.
I've got it downstairs. Because it's actually the... Season 4 is the start of the second Doctor. So that's right. His first story. So they had all the audio. So they just animated the whole thing. It's actually really good.
So there's way more missing than I thought there would be.
Now, I kind of want to see this one.
The Highlanders.
It doesn't give away anything if I click on this bit. DVD release. Yeah. So the we'll have to watch it in the DVD box set of that Lost in Time thing, because it has in it, this isn't giving anything away, but it has the first appearance of, I think, one of the longest serving companions.
Okay.
But the episode's just not there.
Oh, what a shame.
I know. But after season, where is it? After that, when you get to, like, season 5 or whatever, season 7, nothing's missing anymore.
Okay.
So,
some of those seasons look a lot shorter than the ones we're going through.
Yeah. I think what we should do...
Go ahead.
...is when we get to the end of the first Doctor, we'll watch that Lost Stories thing.
Yep.
Where we can go back and just see bits and pieces of the episodes I'm missing. And maybe I can fill in the story.
Ooh, so it's like a...
It's like story time.
Ooh, bedtime. Read me a story, Mr. Matthew.
And then we'll do the same thing for the second Doctor when we get to the end of his life. Because he's got a lot missing too.
Oh.
He's in 3 seasons, 4, 5, 6. They all seem to stick around for about 3 seasons.
Right.
Except the fourth Doctor, who just sticks around forever because he's...
Likes that cash a lot.
He likes that cash. He's a very popular actor. I can tell you the story about him later, because we'll get there.
When we get there.
But that's all I have.
Well.
So we're done.
A bit more than the BBC, if you know what I mean. Jeez. I'd hate to write a story with them.
They would be regretting so much now. Imagine how much money they could have made if they kept them all. Because there's fans of Doctor Who back then, obviously.
Yeah.
But I guess back then in the 60s, you probably weren't thinking... of releasing things.
No.
Because I think you just... I don't know if they would have had VHS TV series, like video TV series being released. And the DVDs weren't even a thought at that point, you know?
Well, there's no internet. So the idea of a global fandom for something like this is not even a reality for them.
Yeah. And if you don't watch it on TV, like, you just never see it.
I wonder if... it'll ever get found. Like, some chance. You know, sometimes they discover things.
Well, a bunch of these were never, like... even some of the ones in the next season, they didn't have them.
For a long time.
Someone had just, by chance, had recorded them on VHS when they were on TV, and they just remastered that video.
Wow.
So it's crazy.
It's amazing.
So... I think that's it.
That's it.
But thank you. If you enjoyed the episode, I'm going to say the things and you can say everything I forget.
Go ahead.
So,
Doctor Who.
If you've enjoyed the episode, you can review it. What are you doing that for?
I can't believe you forgot everything already.
Review it on like Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this.
Spotify. Blah, blah, blah.
Follow us on Facebook.
Yep.
Follow us on all social media.
Twitter, Instagram. We have YouTube. Which sometimes has special images and things that aren't on the other versions of these episodes.
Yep. If you want to get in touch, you can send us a message on those social medias, yep. Or you can send us an email on thefanandthefool@gmail.com.
Thefanandthefool@gmail.com.
And yeah, that's it. Is
come
that it?
Back next week to see if Ian dies.
Yeah, no, he does die.
Come back to see him die. Bye.
Bye.
What are you doing?
I'm reversing the polarity of the ultrasonic screwdriver's power source.
Reverse the polarity!
Reverse the polarity.
I just reverse the polarity.
Reverse.